Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Just for Freedom Estate. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Hello?
Yes.
You can start.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Jamal Brown, and I am your host for tonight here on the Just of Freedom radio show. And tonight we have a fantastic show where we will be discussing a topic that is in the news, that being the topic of monuments. We're going to be talking about a particular monument that you may or may not have heard of, one known as Cleopatra's Needle, and we'll discuss some history behind it. By the end of the show, you will know what it is, where it came from, who created it, how it got into the hands of the New York Metropolitan Museum, and how you can see it today. Again, my name is Jamal Brown. I am the founder and creator of Black 365, where we create a suite of culturally relevant products. Our chief product being the Black 365 calendar. We have a book as well as some Black history cards. You can check it out at black365.com. As I mentioned, monuments are something that we see in all cultures, in all civilizations, throughout history, throughout time. Even when you go inside of the Bible, you hear descriptions, you can read stories of monuments. One such monument, some Christians view as the first idea, a concept of a monument or something being preserved, is the manna from heaven. We all can recall that Exodus story where Moses was fleeing out of Egypt, and God provided those who are on that Exodus with manna from heaven. They were instructed to keep that manna inside of jars and hold it as a testament, as something that they can recall, reflect upon, and preserve, and be a symbol of something. Again, the manna from heaven. They kept it in jars as they were on their exodus. Also, the Tower of Babel. If you read Genesis chapter 11, verse 1 through 9, which we'll go through here shortly, we see inside the Bible images and information of monuments. Let's take a look here. Genesis chapter 11. I'm reading from the New International Version. Genesis 11, verse 1. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. Verse 2. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the people were building. The Lord said, "If as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other." So the Lord scattered them from there all over the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there, the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Again, that is Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, where we see the people coming together, building an edifice, building cities, building a tower to memorialize a place and a time and a period that they felt was important to them. However, God had other plans. Again, tonight we will be discussing another monument that you may or may not have heard of, that being Cleopatra's Needle. What is it? What has come to be known as Cleopatra's Needle is actually three separate obelisks that have been taken from Egypt and displaced throughout the globe. The three pillars known as Cleopatra's Needle, today they can be found in London, Paris, and New York City. We have a caller, 404. You want to chime in?
How are you doing?
Doing fantastic, brother. How about yourself?
I'm just listening. I'm listening to what you're saying.
Okay, great. Real quick, just for posterity's sake, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Roland. I live in New York.
Roland from New York. Okay, let me ask you. I know you just called in to listen, but have you seen Cleopatra's Needle? I'm getting ahead of myself from my notes here, but there in Central Park, have you had a chance to see the Cleopatra's Needle?
I haven't had. No, I haven't.
Okay. Okay. Again, thank you for calling, and hopefully by the end of tonight's show, you will be intrigued enough to make the sojourn down there and check it out.
Okay.
All right. Again, some call it Cleopatra's Needle. Some call it Cleopatra's Obelisk. And again, we will break it down. Again, there are three separate pillars. One is found in London, one is found in Paris, and one is found in New York City. What is an obelisk? We'll read the definition. The obelisk is defined as a stone pillar, typically having a square or rectangular cross section and a pyramid top, set up as a monument or a landmark. Cleopatra's obelisk in New York is made completely of red granite, most likely taken from an area known as Aswan. Several of the ancient Egyptian temples and monuments that have withstood the test of time have come from this sacred area, or this area that was sacred to the ancient Egyptians, known as Aswan. Again, the one there in New York is made of red granite. It stands 69 feet tall and weighs nearly 400,000 pounds. That's right, 200 tons, which is equivalent to nearly 400,000 pounds, and it is inscribed with authentic hieroglyphics. Again, where did it come from? And originally, this obelisk was found in Cairo, Egypt. It was made thousands and thousands of years ago. But again, it's found its way to the shores of the United States, and it's erected in New York's Central Park. It was created in the 18th dynasty by Pharaoh Thutmose III during his 54-year reign in Egypt. Thutmose III comes to us from the most prolific, the most well-documented, the most well-known dynasty in Egypt, that being the 18th dynasty. Let me just talk for just a few moments about the 18th dynasty. The 18th dynasty is the dynasty that you think of when you think of Egypt. I'm talking about, this is the dynasty of Nefertiti. This is the dynasty of Akhenaten. This is the dynasty of, so again, when you think of Egypt, when you think of the beauty, the splendor, the gold, the sculptures, you think of the 18th dynasty, and Thutmose III, who was the creator of Cleopatra's obelisk, comes from this most famed time period. Thutmose III was the nephew of Pharaoh Hatshepsut. Pharaoh Hatshepsut may or may not be a name that you're familiar with, but let me tell you about her. Pharaoh Hatshepsut, mistakenly sometimes referred to as Queen Hatshepsut, but there is one distinction. She was not a queen. She was, in fact, the pharaoh. She was the fifth pharaoh of the 18th dynasty. She perhaps is the world's first well-known head of state. Before her, there's not known to be too many women who ruled a dynasty, a civilization. And she was, in fact, again, Egypt's first female pharaoh. She ruled Egypt for 22 years, just like a sister. Sisters always seem to make things better. They always make things right. They smooth out the rough edges to make things more beautiful. And they, you know, tend to fix things that us brothers mess up from time to time. And so when Pharaoh Hatshepsut came to be the pharaoh, she did things like sent missions out. She sent missions out to places that Egypt had historically been warring with. For example, she sent missions and boats full of gold, boats full of giraffes and elephants to places like India and other places. Again, this is the dynasty that we're talking about that produced so many beautiful things, so many larger-than-life, dare I say, characters and personalities. And again, that she was the aunt of Pharaoh Thutmose III. A little bit more about him. Again, it all comes together. It all makes sense here, but I got to give you some backdrop. Pharaoh Thutmose III, he created the largest empire that Egypt had ever seen. During his reign, he expanded Egypt's territory north to present-day Syria and south into Ethiopia and parts of Sudan. His name, the creator of this beautiful monument that still stands to this day, here on the shores of North America in New York City, created this obelisk. His name loosely translates to eternal, are the manifestations of God, born of the God of wisdom. Let me say that one more time. It's so beautiful. His name, Thutmose III, loosely translates to eternal are the manifestations of God, born of the God of wisdom. Again, he created this obelisk, also known as the Tekken or Tekkenu. These objects historically have been signs or symbols of resurrection, assured resurrection. They're signs of power. They're signs of this is a hallowed or holy place where people have come to do great things. And how did this ancient symbol of resurrection that stood the test of time, that stood being buried in the sands, that stood despite being burned, some say, by the Persians, how did it come to be in North America? Well, here it is. In May of 1877, Judge Albert Farman was a U.S. ambassador to Egypt, and he secured what came to be known as Cleopatra's Needle as a gift for the United States from an Egyptian politician. The politician appreciated the fact that the United States remained somewhat neutral towards Egypt in a time there in the late 1800s when European powers sought to gain political power over Egypt. The United States sort of set back and remained neutral. They didn't, you know, implant themselves. They didn't too much get involved with some turmoil and turnover that was taking place in Egypt. And it was, so as a sign of appreciation, as a sign of gratitude, a gift given by the Egyptian government to the ambassador, the United States secured possession of Cleopatra's Needle or Cleopatra's Obelisk. In the year 1880, the obelisk made its way from Egypt. Once it arrived in New York, it took about 39 days in a blizzard in New York to arrive to its current location. We have another caller, caller 904. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
I want a piece of everything you do, $100,000.
Caller from area code 904, can you hear us? All right, they might have just been calling in and listening to the good stuff we got going on. Also, they have some background noise going on there. So, again, call from 904 if you would like to turn down your background noise. Let us know, and we'll put you back in for your question or comment in this conversation that we're having this evening about monuments and this particular monument that we have there.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem, brother. Again, caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Jacksonville, Emmanuel, Washington.
Brother Washington, it's a pleasure to have you on this evening. What question or comment do you have on this topic this evening?
Well, I'm just tuning in, so I better listen a little bit before I get a question in.
Okay, no problem. It's a pleasure to have you. Pleasure to have you. For I understand you're a former guest and a friend of the show. So, again, it's a pleasure to have you in the house with us this evening.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Again, we're talking about monuments. Again, monuments have been in the news. We've seen monuments fall. We've seen monuments rise here in recent times. Some are going easily. Some are going with much strife and consternation. However, monuments are important to every culture, every civilization. And it seems odd to some. Why is this ancient Egyptian monument found in New York's Central Park? Again, my name is, for those who are just tuning in, my name is Jamal Brown. I am back with the Just the Freedom radio show. Hopefully you'll be hearing my voice more in the coming weeks and months and years. I am a historian. For more than half of my life, I read, researched, understood, and attempted to teach the best of our collective history from ancient Africa up to present day. I am the creator of the website black365.com, BLACK365.com. There you will find a calendar that I have been producing along with a small team for the past 12 years. Inside of that calendar, you find a little bit of history that happened in our history on that day in history. 365 days of Black Facts calendar highlights an event in Black history every single day, and a whole host of other products there, black365.com. Now let's get back. We were talking about how and where and when and why this obelisk known as Cleopatra's Obelisk arrived in New York. As I was saying, in the year was 1880, the obelisk made its way from Egypt to New York. Once it arrived in New York, it took about 39 days to meander through the street. There was crowds and throngs of people who came out despite the frigid conditions. And finally, on the day, January 22nd, 1881, there were onlookers, there were construction folks who erected what's known as Cleopatra's Needle or Cleopatra's Obelisk there in New York's Central Park, just east of the Metropolitan Museum. It is the oldest outdoor monument in Central Park. How can you see it today? Some may ask, where is it at? How can you see it? And again, it still stands to this day in New York Central Park. In 2014, there was a large conservation effort that took place where specialists from all around the world, some of the greatest minds in conservation, got together to figure out how to remove the years and centuries and decades and ages worth of dirt and pollution that was on it. Again, there's over 2,000, I don't know if you heard me, there's over 2,000 square feet of surface on this humongous 69-foot, 440,000-pound monument that stands there in New York Central Park that made its way from Egypt. But again, it can be found in New York Central Park just east of the Met. And again, it has survived the test of time. It's been knocked down. It's been burned. It's been buried in the sands of Egypt. However, some folks here in the United States thought that it would be something an empowering monument, and so they chose to bring it here to New York. For those who may not still know, despite the description I gave, what a tekken or what an obelisk is, think of the Washington Monument. The Washington Monument is located in Washington, D.C. As you know, it's white. It is, from what I understand, the largest structure in D.C. I don't know if this was an urban legend or a myth, but I've once read that the obelisk, the Washington Monument in D.C., is 13 stories tall. I've read that there's an ordinance that says that no edifice, no building in D.C. can be more than 13 stories tall, so that theoretically, at least, you can see Washington's monument from any place in Washington, D.C. Again, this is an ancient Egyptian symbol of resurrection. It stands as a testament to a people letting the world know that here in this place, we will stand eternally. We will stand forever. There is an assured resurrection that will take place. This place, with these principles, with these folk ways and mores and values, will stand forever. So it just seems amazingly interesting to me, at least, that the folks who thought it would be necessary to bring one of these obelisks from Egypt. Again, we don't exactly know what was in the minds of those who decided to bring this to this country, but perhaps they were saying, man, this civilization known as Egypt has existed since the beginning of time. Let us see if we can capture and propel some of the energy, some of the essence, some of the life force that has allowed that country and that civilization to stand withstand the test of time, so allow us to get some of that energy here with us. Similarly, as I was, again, wanting to tie in the fact that there's been a number of monuments, as we all know, Confederate monuments are coming down, monuments of Christopher Columbus, monuments of others are now with this Black Lives Matter movement and the social change that is going on in our streets and all over this country. Monuments are coming down. And it begs the question to ask, you know, what monuments should we keep, should we preserve? Are monuments just things from the past that remind us of the past, or should they, again, be able to speak and provide inspiration and what have you? There's always a interesting question, interesting juxtaposition that we have when we think about monuments and what they mean and what they stand for and what they should mean. Also, we're seeing the renaming of military installations, military bases. Some say the Confederates, whose names are on these monuments, they were on the wrong side of history. They lost. Why would we have the names of traitors, folks who fought against the United States on buildings? That's a question that I'm asking you, those in the listening audience. We have Emmanuel. Are you ready to chime in?
Sure. As I was listening, and actually I just got out of the hospital, and while I was in the hospital, I was watching a great video by one of the African British historians, Robin Walker, who wrote the book When We Ruled. And as I was learning through the video about just how great we were in terms of as you're talking about this Cleopatra's Needle, and just talking about the buildings, and when I think about it now, everything that we see in our modern day cities can be traced back to ancient Kemet.
Yes, sir. Talk about it.
Yeah. So, one of my dilemmas is, just how much do we really need to, try to resurrect our greatness when we have laid, as they say, laid down civilization. And
yes, sir.
And so I think my better question would be, how is it possible for us to, one, do the daily duty of living our personal lives, and then, take the time to, go into the self-study. Because, I'm quite sure, someone like yourself, and, I pride myself on being, somewhat of a historian, but, there's just so much. And in our community, we are not set up in our community to support those scholars unless you go to, the school system here in America or wherever.
Right.
But
right.
You're surely not being supported by the people back in the hood. And,
right.
That becomes the dilemma that I have, that oftentimes, it's great that I know all of this, pertinent details, but how do I not just be, as they're saying about the Bible, be a not only a knower, but a doer? How do I take the history and make it applicable today?
Beautiful question. Before I go any further, let me just say, Brother Emmanuel, I'm so happy, and I'm sure others are as well, that you are at home and you're standing upright and you're breathing and talking and able to contribute and continue to move forward. We're thankful for that. Again, glad that you're home and recovering well, brother.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And to answer your most important question, that has been the quest of my life. My life's work is dedicated to exactly what you just said, taking the best of who we are and what we are, not only reading and researching and understanding it and internalizing it, but taking it a step further and manifesting it through our daily walk, our daily talk, our daily activity. And the most important piece is, again, not only keeping it, but giving it away. All the history, all the knowledge, all the nuggets, all the gems that we have, it's not only our right, but our responsibility to share this information, particularly with a young person. And as you said, the trick comes, how do you make it relevant? And so I just try to find myself, try to find ways to synthesize the information, somewhat put it in the language and logic of the streets, if you will, and, you know, and spoon feed it to people. Don't hit them over the head. Too many of us acquire knowledge, information, and want to hit people over the head with it. We want to showcase and show off how intelligent we are, but it takes a humble brother. I can hear the humbleness in your voice. It takes a humble person such as yourself to, again, find ways to make it relevant, find ways to make it palatable for our people, just like, kind of like the history I was given with the 18th dynasty. We can say to a young person, hey, you know, all that gold, all those diamonds, all those gems that we rock around our necks today. Do you know those brothers in Egypt wore gold just like we wear gold today? You know, did you know there was a brother named Thutmose III who had this humongous temple, and part of this temple exists in New York City today? You know, there's people who live their entire lives in New York City without knowing that something from thousands of years ago from the shores of Egypt has made its way to the shores of New York and stands here as a testament of time that when we come together, work hard as a people, live together, collectively work, some of those principles that we all know, unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, when we use these principles that are tried and tested, we can create things that will withstand the test of time. And, you know, we can roll that into, did you know Thutmose III, his auntie, she kind of was like maybe a big mama. She was one of those sisters, you know, around the way that, you know, ruled and did things well. She was the first pharaoh. You know, her name was Hatshepsut. And, you know, she was related to a brother named Akhenaten, and he changed the game. You know, he had his thoughts and ideas on how things should be, so he completely flipped the script. And, you know, we can find these individuals, find these personalities from the past, humanize them and bring them to life and, you know, tell their stories and make them relevant and give their lives purpose and meaning and relevancy here today. You know, one of my favorite people from ancient Egypt, especially during this time of the pandemic and homeschool. Again, one of the things I like to say is not only our rights, but our responsibility. And now we have time as we're all at home and these stay-at-home orders and, you know, shelter-in-place orders that we have all across the country. We have time. You know, many of us, we've watched everything on Netflix. At this point, we watched 1,000,001 YouTube videos. We've walked the dog. You know, dusted off the bike. Now it's time for us to go back and dig into some of these books that we have in our libraries and on our shelves and really, again, reread some of the books. That's what I found myself doing, rereading some of the books that I've already read and finding ways to synthesize and, again, humanize and bring to life the individuals that I have been doing this reading about. It's an excellent time to take our children and ourselves again. Of course, you do your social distancing. Of course, you know, do all the things to keep safe. But virtually every state in this United States, there are monuments, there are contributions of Black people. You know, I'm here in the Los Angeles area. There are certain parts of Huntington Beach and other beaches where Black people were the primary purveyors, the primary participants, the primary folks who've laid the foundation for some of these areas all up and down the coastline here in California. There, again, are Black beaches that were historically Black and what have you. So, again, I encourage each and every one of us that will hear this broadcast to find out what is the Black history in my neighborhood, in my city, in my area code, in my town, in my half of the state. And, you know, let's take a trip. Let's get out and see the beautiful world around us and see the beautiful contributions that Black people have made. Brother Emmanuel said it so very eloquently. We have laid the foundation of this nation. Our blood, sweat, and tears literally are in the soil of these United States, and you cannot go too far without seeing the great contributions of black people in this country. Before I close, let me just give a quick recap of some of the topics that we talked about. We talked about Cleopatra's Needle, created by Pharaoh Thutmose III in the 18th dynasty, of the greatest dynasty, in my opinion, in ancient Egypt. He created an obelisk. An obelisk is an ancient Egyptian symbol of resurrection, ancient Egyptian symbol of power and steadfastness. And the U.S. government got their hands on one in the years 1887. It was given as a gift to the United States and brought to the shores of the United States in 1880. On January 22nd, 1881, Cleopatra's Needle was erected under the guise of the New York Metropolitan Museum and is erected in New York Central Park, where it stands today, 69 feet tall, nearly 440,000 pounds, over 2,000 square feet of surface, has authentic ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics on it. Again, ancient African knowledge, history, information, standing tall in this United States. There are others that can be found, authentic obelisks. There's one in London. There's the sister, if you will, the sister one to the one that's in New York Central Park is found in London. There's another one in Paris. There are some in Rome, St. Peter's Basilica, the United States' capital, Washington, D.C. The largest building in Washington, D.C. is the Washington Monument, and it is, in fact, a replica of this ancient Egyptian symbol known as an obelisk or a tekken, which, is, as I mentioned before, is a sign of resurrection, was a sign of steadfastness, is a sign of strength. Again, black history, what we call black history, truly is world history, and you can't go too far kicking over a rock or digging too deep without discovering and uncovering black history. We are the mothers and fathers of civilization, the world's first doctors, first lawyers, first politicians, first mathematicians, everywhere we went on this entire globe. When people begin to dig, they see blackness. They see greatness. They see us. I am Jamal Brown. You're tuned in to another exciting episode of the Gist of Freedom radio show. You'll be hearing my voice in the near future. For now, I am signing off. Thank you all for listening. Talk to you soon. Peace.